Oh my God, an insane goal!
The game's gone mad.
Hello, you're listening to The Game's Gone Mad with me, Olivia, where we discuss the week's biggest football news. Today, a Dutchman, an Irishman, an English woman have walked into a podcast studio to talk about the Nations League, transfer rumours and the Women's World Cup.
The game's gone mad.
The dream team is back. Patrick and Pete,
hi.
Welcome.
Hello.
How are you both?
Good.
I mean, I'm all right, other than the fact that you just call me Irish when I'm actually Northern
Irish.
But, you know,
she
upgraded you, if anything.
I mean, it's definitely a
I'm very sorry.
We're equal. But different.
Patrick, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
What did you do in your week off the Dogcast?
Just sat around and wondered if my life would ever regain meaning.
It has.
To be honest, I tried to find somebody to replace you within the Football Daily team to talk about.
Yeah.
Somebody who would eat with their mouth shut. But in the end, I was not able to find anyone,
yeah,
so I'm glad
difficult.
You've returned.
Thank you. That's probably the kindest thing you've ever said to me. Let's move on to the first topic, which is the Nations League.
Ooh.
So Portugal won the inaugural Nations League on their home soil in an underwhelming final against the Netherlands. What have you both made of the tournament?
It's glorified friendlies. You know,
it's way better than friendlies,
right.
Surely. Yes.
No, this is the thing, right? It was made to replace meaningless friendlies, but they're still just fairly meaningless friendlies. Right. To say the Nations League is actually a major tournament is a bit of a farce.
I don't think it's a major tournament yet. But it's way better than the friendlies, and it could prove to be. You should have seen, like, how Portugal celebrated it. It proves it's not just an easy friendly.
And the fact that people went there to watch the game, like, I mean, I know some people ended up getting arrested or whatever, but the fact that people cared enough to get arrested is kind of an improvement on a friendly, I feel.
But at the same time, like, teams like England will always have following, like, travelling fans that will go relentlessly because they've got nothing else going for them.
Not
in
so
their
many
lives.
Numbers.
That's a fair point.
Atmosphere looked so good.
Did it?
And yeah, it would have been better if they'd obviously got to the final because the stadium was full of England
but they
fans.
Didn't.
But they didn't. You just don't have to look so happy about it.
Why? I think that England losing is something we should celebrate. Always.
Why?
Because it's funny, and because England are the most, they have the most entitled fans in world football, despite the fact they've been rubbish for literally over half a century.
Do you think it's not entitled? Fans. It's just they get excited because they care.
Entirely
enough.
Delusional fans, I would argue.
Yeah, I'd agree. This is the first time they've been good, and you've still got people saying, "Oh, they're not that good." Are
thing
they?
Is like, right.
They're actually great for the first time ever.
I don't think that's the case. I think people you're talking about a select few that are criticizing.
I mean,
team.
I would say like. In the office leaving on Friday evening before the semi-final against Holland, pretty much everyone was expecting England to go through and were expecting England as a favourite to win that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no. I mean, it's just not that easy.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, fair enough, you've got to the semi-final of the World Cup. But realistically, it was the easiest run to the semi-final I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Right? And then you've, well, the teams you beat were in regulation time in 90 minutes were Sweden,
mm-hmm.
Tunisia, and Panama. Oh, fantastic, fantastic effort from Gareth and the boys.
To be fair, this is more, even talking about it, I feel more engaged than I've ever felt talking about international friendlies. Like, I do think it's a big improvement. I think that the Nations League, like it's not like amazing. It's still not like the Champions League or whatever, but I think it's worth watching. It's more competitive. Like, the groups actually have games that are worth watching. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's the same way that, like, if, say, French football is on TV and I'm really bored on, like, I don't know, Saturday evening or whatever, then I won't watch it if it's, like, Lyon playing, like, Nantes. But if Lyon are playing, like, Monaco, maybe I will.
Yeah.
And the same principles here. Like, if I have to watch, like, the Netherlands play, you know, Kosovo, I'm not going to watch it. But if I could watch the Netherlands play the reigning world champions, I could watch them play France, I could watch them play Germany, I actually will watch those games, and I did watch some of those games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think perhaps I lost a lot of interest in it very quickly because Northern Ireland won none of their games.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah.
You're coming across quite biased here.
What? I'm not allowed to support the country I'm from. Is that
what? It's Northern Ireland.
Did either of you watch the final?
Yeah, I watched some of it.
So, what did you make of Portugal? And it was quite nice for it not to be all about Ronaldo for once. Although, he does orchestrate an excellent celebration, doesn't he? He really knew where to put the trophy. They tried to give it to him earlier and he was like, whoa, 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 no, I'm going to lift it over here.
He does
it
every single evening in his mirror.
Yeah, definitely. But I don't know. To be honest, in the game, like, I found it quite demoralising to watch because the Portugal were clearly the better team for the majority of the game. Like, the Netherlands had a couple of dangerous counter-attacks, but never really got a foothold in the match. And it was really only the fact that they've got a pretty decent back line that kept them in it. But
I think they conceded 18 shots on target.
Yeah.
Or 18 shots on target.
I mean, that would be a lot. Yeah.
18 efforts.
I mean, Portugal weren't great either, but they were clearly the better side. And to be fair, they were also at home. It does make a big difference.
Amends for losing at home in the Euros in 2004. Teenage Ronaldo cried.
Didn't they make amends for that when they won the Euros?
Yeah, but not
in 2016?
On home soil. All right. As our resident Dutchman, have the Netherlands?
Not even that Dutch.
Well,
how Dutch are you?
My dad's got a Dutch passport. So my dad's technically Dutch, as in he's only got a Dutch passport. Yeah. But my dad is Zimbabwean. Mm-hmm. But my dad's dad was legit Dutch. So I'm basically a quarter Dutch.
Well, you're more Dutch than
I am. That's a bad rap name.
Or half Dutch.
MC
Von Dutch.
Remember those hats?
I exclusively wear Von Dutch.
Well, you're the most Dutch person we have in the room.
That's definitely true.
So do you think the future is now looking brighter for the Netherlands under Ronald Koeman?
I think it's generally been looking brighter for a while. I mean, having...
Since not making it into the last two major...
Yeah. And I think Koeman's the best manager they've had for a while. Like, Koeman may not be a spectacular top level manager, but within the kind of field of international managers, he's pretty good and he's quite defensive. And I think being defensive actually often is the better way to go in tournaments. There's a good generation of talent coming through.
How much would you say the improvement to the Netherlands international team is down to what Ajax have accomplished in the last couple of seasons with the talent they've grown?
Not necessarily what they've accomplished, but the talent that's come through, certainly. Yeah, I think that De Jong pretty much gives you a functional midfield, regardless of who you play him with, and that's good. Though also then Martin de Roon is a really good defensive midfielder, Donny van de Beek, Wijnaldum are good. I mean, the centre-backs are obviously sensational, having De Ligt and van Dijk next to each other, and you've got Ake as well. You've got Fosu Mensah coming through. And then your fullbacks are okay. Denzel Dumfries is quite good. But really, they've now got a quality player in every phase of play. So they've got Depay up front, who's great. Mm-hmm. They've got De Jong in midfield, who's great. And they've got two excellent centre-backs. So that really means if you've got quality players in every area of the field, you're going to be a favourite against the majority of sides. Yeah. And it's really only when you come up against the top sort of... You'd expect them now to get to probably the quarters of the Euros, depending who they come up against in the second round. And that is a big improvement.
Yeah. I think Depay kind of personifies this kind of renaissance of Dutch football, because he came to United, didn't really work out, and was kind of labelled instantly as a flop.
Yeah.
Wasn't worth the money he paid, wasn't a good player, wasn't a top-level player. Went to Lyon and has got 28 goal involvements this season.
Yeah.
And then under Koeman, internationally, scored 8 in the last 12. So, you know, from going when he left United, 2016?
Something like that.
2016, 2017.
Yeah.
Labelled a flop. Terrible signing. And now he's leading the line for what would be one of the better teams in the world.
Where do you see his future? Do you think he'll stay in Ligue 1?
I don't really see why he needs to move straight away. Mm-hmm. He's not that young. He's 26?
He's 26.
26. If he's going to move, if he's going to get a big move, it will need to be in the next year or two.
Yeah.
But it could be the Wilfried Zaha scenario, where he prefers to be the big fish in a smaller pond, struggles to play in the biggest teams. But then again, the argument kind of takes away from that he's class for...
At international level.
Netherlands.
Yeah. I don't know. The question is whether anyone offers enough for him, really. Now Lyon are selling for Lomendi to Real... They're not going to be in a position where they have to sell. But I mean...
Is that confirmed?
No, but it's... Well, Deschamps sort of let something slip at the international training camp that it looks like it's basically done. But I don't think... I think after the Fekir thing fell through because of the knee issue, I think that Depay is the guy you'd go for. But yeah, you're right. If he doesn't go the next year or two, they'll move on to the next guy, which will be Kone or Dembele.
Mm-hmm.
And... Yeah. I don't know, maybe they... But I think actually for the moment, they'd probably accept selling Depay if it... Even though he's the best attacker, they'd accept selling him if it meant keeping Dembele, Aouar, Ndombele, Toussaint, all those guys.
Who would buy him, though?
There were links to Atletico Madrid and there were links to Liverpool as well. It looked like the Liverpool thing was happening. Yeah. And I think the Liverpool thing's a great idea.
Do you think he'd be keen to return to the Premier League, though?
For the right club. And I think if a club offered big money for him, then you'd assume that they value you.
Liverpool under Klopp currently are a completely different side to Depay under Van Gaal.
Van Gaal, yeah. And this is the thing, like, Liverpool do need another world-class attacker.
Yeah.
And they need somebody who can play off the left. Like, if Salah's out injured, it's a big downgrade to Shaqiri, but they've got a guy who plays on the right. Whereas they don't really have a backup centre-forward, yeah, and they don't have a backup left-winger. And Depay plays both of those positions, yeah, and he played centre-forward a lot this season.
Was Sturridge really actually their second centre-forward?
I think so, or backup, Origi, depending, you know, Origi, what. But Origi's also their second-choice left-winger. So, I mean, yeah, like, they could similarly play, you know, a 4-2-3-1 against weaker sides. Like, they can do what they want. So,
yeah,
I think Depay solves a lot of issues for them, especially if you assume that, unlike this season, they're unlikely to have another season where their entire front three stays injury-free, yeah, for the majority, yeah, of the campaign.
And also, Liverpool are in the quite enviable position to be in that their squad's actually pretty well-rounded.
Other, yeah,
than, you know, they maybe one another centre-back, maybe a bit of cover at left-back, and like you say, someone that can play left-wing through the middle.
Mm.
You know, they're of other top six sides, there's a lot more surgery to be done, yeah, elsewhere.
Yeah,
definitely.
Definitely.
Right, so you've both already mentioned how much you enjoy England's success.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, love it.
So
love it.
I'd like to talk about that for
a
while.
It's coming home. It's not shut up. That chant is shit.
You're both so mean.
It was so great when it didn't come home.
That, yeah, is so... honestly, you're the only people in the entirety of...
In the entire English office, yeah. I mean, shocking.
Yeah, exactly.
London, who didn't enjoy the success. People.
Like, no,
I don't understand how you can't enjoy
the
like.
Fun, no. But I just didn't want England to win the World Cup. It would
have
been all.
Why not?
Because they'd have been so obnoxious. Because their attitude wouldn't be like, oh, thank God, you know, like we finally got. It's like Liverpool winning the league, right? If Liverpool won the league, they wouldn't have been like, thank God, finally, we're so relieved that we can let this go. They'd have been so obnoxious for
years
to come.
We're back in a rightful spot.
Yeah, they'd have been like, we're the greatest team in the world. And everyone would have been the same. They'd have been like, two World Wars and two World Cups. Like, it would have been the worst.
The thing is, right, I'm not one of these Northern Ireland fans who, like, hates England.
Well, you know, I mean, you're sounding like that.
It kind of sounds somewhat like that. But I like to see all home nations do well. But because England fans are so insufferable when they do well, I like them to do well enough, but, you know, not so well that they can actually brag about it.
You want them to fall at the last hurdle,
yeah,
which is exactly what they did, losing in the semis to the Netherlands. But the Netherlands were kind of up for the taking in that game.
I mean, they always are.
But I think there are still some positives to come out of England's attempts at the Nations League. Yes, England have now won two penalty shootouts.
Oh.
In 2 years.
Wow.
Don't you think that has a huge impact on their mentality, though?
I actually think that mentality is not an issue for this generation of kids. No. Like when during the World Cup you were getting people who are like 19, 20, like Trent Alexander-Arnold, like putting tweets up, like, or Jesse Lingard saying, like, it's coming home on Twitter, I was like, maybe they're just not scared of anything. Like, that's kind of nice. Like, maybe they're genuinely not fearful.
I mean, why should someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold be scared of anything when he's just won the Champions League? They're a bit different now.
Because when he comes up against the Dutch, he's going to get dominated. Yeah. Like when William of Orange ruled this shit country. Like, that's why. Like, Matthijs de Ligt absolutely destroyed
the UK. How have you made that
comparison? Because that was because a Dutchman ruled the UK. Just
fair,
so you know.
As a Northern Irishman, I could have some Dutch heritage very easily.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well done. Do you know what I can say in Dutch? I can say, I don't speak any Dutch.
Can you say that now?
Ik spreek geen Nederlands. Yeah.
Nice.
Great accent as well.
Yeah, excellent.
Netherlands.
Did you watch the penalty shootout? Did you see Jordan Pickford?
Jordan Pickford,
it was excellent. Yeah,
it was
loved it.
Was this against Switzerland?
Yeah, in the most meaningless game of all time.
Yeah, it was. But the penalty shootout was excellent. Jordan Pickford coming up to take a penalty. Oh, it was magical.
England versus Switzerland.
The best part
of it
was
after a nil all 120 minutes.
I'm just trying to take some positives.
Granit Xhaka versus Eric Dier. Christ.
Both scored.
I just love when a keeper takes a penalty because they don't have the option of going back to celebrate with their teammates.
Yeah,
they have to celebrate by themselves and then just like compose themselves and walk off.
It's really awkward. What number? How many penalties
he
were there?
He was fifth.
He was in the first five.
Yeah.
He was just like, I'll take the fifth penalty.
Who Dele
the
Alli didn't
players?
Take one.
Dele Alli was like, nah.
Yeah, no, Jordan Pickford was like, I'll take it.
Okay, I'm telling you right now, I know exactly how Jordan Pickford took his penalty. Absolutely leathered it. Just hit it as hard as he could.
It was actually an excellent penalty.
He did smash it, but it went right corner, bottom right corner.
Well done to England on their third place. Congratulations to Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
as a representative of England, I'm going to say thank you and let's move on before you get nastier. The game's gone mad. Our next topic is transfer news, and I've picked out three of the biggest transfer rumours from this week. And the first one does include Harry Maguire.
Oh, for God's sake.
But before we talk about Harry Maguire, did you hear the England chant that he drinks the vodka and the Jaeger?
Yeah.
So what is your shot of choice,
what do they
Peter?
Rhyme with Jaeger?
They didn't really rhyme anything. It was just something quite offensive about his head. That is exactly what they rhymed with Jaeger.
And then it's just Harry Maguire. What is the tune that's to do?
That is quite fun.
Harry Maguire.
Oh, that was good.
An excellent chant. I'll give it to
you. That's barely a song.
Yeah,
so good.
Like, that's so bad, it's good. What is my shot of choice?
Yeah, he likes vodka. He drinks the vodka and the Jaeger. So do you like the tequila?
I mean, I'm not a massive fan of tequila. I mean, I'll stomach it.
If you had to do
I
a shot.
Do some vodka.
Are you an eye napper?
You're pure scum.
That is like, gross.
That's a shot I grew up doing in Kent. But it's just, that's how bad that is.
That's a Kentish shot.
Sweet Kentish shot.
I don't really
sounds like cider.
The taste of tequila doesn't really sit well.
I love tequila.
See, I hate Sambuca, but I quite like tequila.
I adore tequila. But tequila's actually delicious. What do you do in Ireland?
What do you mean?
What's the go-to shot? Is it like Irish whiskey?
What's that drink that you had in the bottle?
Buckfast.
Oh, Buckfast is essentially a red tonic wine, which...
It's brutal.
It's somewhat medicinal in taste. And
it's
has
horrible.
A lot of caffeine in it.
It's like Four Loko, basically, but wine made by monks.
It's like 15% wine, or 15% alcohol and made by monks in England in Buckfast Abbey and sold predominantly in Scotland and Northern Ireland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but the Gaelic fringe.
Yeah, the guys who just love a good time.
It was horrible. I did not enjoy
that. The people who
want
to speed up life. The pace of life is so slow. Like, let's just do 100 grams of caffeine.
Have you never been drinking a glass of red wine and being like, you know what, this is good, but it could be better if it was packed full of caffeine?
Yeah, I just grind up coffee granules and just mix it in.
But yeah, Buckfast is great.
Not sure though. Anyway, right, let's get back to Harry Maguire.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Oh,
I would quite like to see Olivia drink Buckfast.
I've tried it.
Yeah, do you not like it?
No, but like a lot of it.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
Be like, let's go spinning.
I do like spinning. But tell you what, I also love Harry Maguire, and
huge head.
He's rumored to be receiving a little bit of interest from Man United and Man City, but Leicester supposedly price him at $85 million. What are you thinking?
Ridiculous.
It's a hefty price for someone with such a... I mean, to be fair, in terms of real estate, £85 million is probably bang on because
maybe it's
so big.
Extra for the size of his head,
But in terms
how
of
how much
actually,
bigger is that than Virgil van Dijk's?
Twice the size, probably.
£10 million?
I don't know. When you take into account the hair, it's like pretty a wash. But like, for £85 million, I feel like you could get a much better defender. You could get like Skriniar or someone probably for that money.
Mm.
Like, I mean, Maguire's good, but he's not outstanding. He's good. And he's probably worth 40 to 50.
And how old is he now? 26?
26. So he's not...
26. So
yeah, so...
You would get his best years as a centre-back, I would say.
You would. And he is a weapon at set pieces. Like, Joe actually talked about this on the Sunday
and
Live
good in a penalty shootout
podcast. Is he?
Did he take one?
Yeah.
I missed that one.
He thinks he's great with the ball at his feet, and he's okay. Yeah. Like, but he's quite fun to watch because he's a maniac.
Positionally, he's questionable.
Yes.
Do you think that Leicester are going to realise this is way too much money and are going to drop it, or they're just going to try and keep hold of him at all costs?
I think they're happy to keep hold of him. But to be honest, if I was going to get... If I could get 60 mil for Harry Maguire, I would probably just take it if I were them.
Mm-hmm.
I think 85 million is way too much. You know, it's also... Van Dijk went for 75 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And, okay, for just for inflation, that's probably on par.
He's not going to have the same effect.
He's not
going to
have the same. He's just not the same player. Van Dijk's, you know, like a generational centre back, and he's just not. Whereas 50 million, I think, especially because he's British as well. He's British and he's young.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For teams like City, that is a lot more attractive.
I think 85 is a we don't want to sell figure.
Yeah.
I think say 65 would be a we're willing to negotiate figure. But I think 85 is a we don't need the money. Like, and to be fair, like, they probably don't really need the money. Like,
surely he's going to want to move. Though,
yeah, I was just going to say that. Like,
yeah, but there's very little he can do if he's got a contract. Like, people always talk about like players wanting to move, but a player can't do anything. They can hand in a transfer request. It means nothing. Like, they can't do anything. If they've got a contract, they've got a contract. And, like, Harry Maguire, I don't think, is going to go on strike. And I don't think another... I don't think a big club's going to make enough of a fuss for Harry Maguire to get
just,
that over the line.
Just go elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you can get a Koulibaly for 90 mil, if you can get a De Ligt for 100 mil, if you can get a Skriniar for 80 mil, why would you pay this much for Harry Maguire?
I mean, Koulibaly, I've seen prices at around 89 for him, but I've also seen them as high as 130.
Yikes.
So it seems to be that if, like, a... He seems to be more, if a battle goes on, that price will go up. Whereas Harry Maguire, I think if you go in at 85, you'll get him. But he's not worth it. And I would prefer
if Maguire goes in at 85, that's going to increase their prices, surely.
I don't know. Because he's homegrown as well, which is a factor. But I don't know. Like, 85 is like a... When you were a kid and you were on FIFA and you were like, I don't want to sell this player, but I'll sell it. I'll give him a buyout clause of like 150 mil. And if anyone pays it, that's fine. like that's what it feels like. They're just like, give us 85 mil. And if somebody says yes, then you're like, okay, fine. Like, we'll take 85 mil. We'll buy Tielemans for 40. And the other 45, we'll go and buy a really good centre-back. Because you could probably get like Upamecano or something for that money.
I think
that would be a better buy.
I think Harry Maguire's in a similar situation to... Kieran Trippier, in that he's kind of riding the coattails of a very good World Cup.
Yeah.
In that, you know, England
more successfully than Kieran.
Trippier. I mean, Kieran Trippier's gone off a cliff. But yeah, I mean, Harry Maguire, everyone kind of relates back to the World Cup and how he was very good in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But again, he kind of normal service has resumed. He's not a bad player. He's a very good player, but he's like a 7 out of 10 player. You know.
Yeah.
Would you not have him at United?
Not for 85 million.
You'd obviously prefer De Ligt to go to Man United.
Well, I mean, literally pay anything for De Ligt. Like,
so let's move
anything.
On to De Ligt.
Give him Old Trafford. Let him live there.
Rename it.
Yeah.
De Ligt is now obviously under the guidance of Mino Raiola. Okay. So he is in talks, apparently, with the PSG sporting director today and tomorrow.
Okay.
Ready to broker a deal to send him to Paris, where he will... Now, we had different figures here.
Yeah.
How much did you think he would be earning in Paris?
Well, I read this morning that it was 256.
Yeah, that's what I had read.
On the Express, but then George said someone else had tweeted saying that they were going to offer him 340k.
Because Man United have supposedly offered him 350k a week if he goes to United. But it seems that his, obviously, agent is pushing for a move to Paris where he will earn less, but I assume Raiola will earn more.
Raiola would get a fat check from PSG.
Like, so do you think that means he's going to PSG? You said earlier, Patrick, that players don't really necessarily have a say in their contracts. Do you think De Ligt could be farmed out to PSG due to his agent?
I don't think he'd necessarily mind going to PSG. Like, I mean,
really?
If I
ahead of Barcelona?
PSG have a better coach. Like, don't get me wrong.
So.
I'd like to. If I were him, I'd be like, oh, it'd be good to go to Barcelona and play Messi. But I'd also be like, I'm 19. You can sign a 4-year contract, and if you're getting paid like 300k a week,
I think they would strap him down to 5-year contract.
Yeah, but even if they do, you can run it down, and you can leave at 23 with a year left, or 24 on a free.
That's still 5 years.
But in that time, you'll win 5 titles, and they will be a contender in the Champions League, and you'll get to play with Mbappe. Like,
you're also just kind of pissing about in League One. Like, no disrespect to League One, but if you can go to La Liga or the Premier League at 19 and be like an integral part of that team almost straight away.
But what's the pay cut though? Like, if the difference is between 350k and say 150k, and you're 19 and you're like, I can secure my financial well-being for the rest of my life now with this one contract, or I can take a little bit more of a risk.
United have literally already offered him apparently 350k. So like,
yeah, but you're not going to go to United.
But what's the difference between like 350k and 500k? Other than 150k a week, obviously. But you're earning so much money that it almost doesn't matter.
Sure, but the difference between 350k and, say, 150 is quite substantial. Like, and I think that's the region we were talking about for Barcelona. And also, Barcelona do get bored of toys quite quickly. Mm. Like, don't get me wrong, like, De Ligt, I think he's an amazing player. I think he's going to be a great centre-back. But I also think Umtiti was absolutely out of this world last year.
I've never seen a 19-year-old centre-back command a game the way he's done.
Sure,
at that level.
Sure, but I've also never really seen Barcelona show that much loyalty to a player who didn't come through their academy.
Do you think, though, if he went to Barcelona, say, he isn't going to be able to command a team like he does at Ajax? He's not going to be, you know, the captain there, is he?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to play alongside Piqué.
Yeah.
Like, or Longley if Piqué's injured. But, like, Busquets is still going to play a lot. And Messi's still going to play, obviously.
Yeah,
and Suarez is still going
to
play.
He doesn't need to go in as captain. But him having that, like, leadership,
yeah,
having two leading centre-backs is not a bad thing. You don't need one to be the beta.
if I were 19, I'd think, what's more important, like that I develop under a good coach, or I just go to the club that I, you know, want to end my career with? And I think actually, like, Tuchel will make him a better player than Valverde will.
Valverde probably won't be there for that long, though.
Yeah. But you have no idea who they're getting afterwards. Yeah. They'll probably hire Emery or something mental.
It's no doubt that he would definitely develop better under Tuchel than Solskjaer.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
He's not going to Man United.
Yeah,
There's no way. There's no way you can get him at Man
absolutely
United.
We're getting Harry Maguire for
Yeah,
like
you are.
Mil.
95 mil.
Tarkovsky.
I would like to see De Ligt at Barca, to be honest. I think he would start ahead of Ntidi.
No, I think he would as well. But my point is just that, like, I think Barcelona are perfectly capable of just, like, you know, somebody gets an injury and then they lose interest after. Yeah.
I think they are at risk of losing him, though, because they've kind of, like, Barcelona aren't going to pay what PSG and Man United are offering. So Barcelona are just kind of resting on, like, oh, I bet you'd love to come here. With Mino Raiola involved, that isn't really going to have the same weight as cold hard cash.
Yeah, Mino Raiola is getting paid. But on the other
hand, which makes me think he's just going straight to PSG.
Though if I were Barcelona, I'd be like, let's just get Messi to call him. Yeah. Like, just get Messi. I'd get Messi to call every player who wanted to sign and be like, call him, be like, oh, we really want to have you at Barcelona. Yeah. I'd record one message from Messi where he's just like, I can't wait to have you at Barcelona or whatever, and everyone would be like, oh my God.
My concern with the PSG move is that he is probably potentially danger of just kind of going into obscurity. And that, like, Mbappe has gone to PSG and has still stolen the headlines, but that's because he's banging goals.
It's
much harder for centre-back.
Yeah,
it's much more, like, quantifiable.
He's going to keep making clean sheets in Ligue 1, isn't he?
Oh, he's kept another clean sheet, fantastic, as opposed to Mbappe banging a hat-trick.
In, like, 2 minutes.
So there is a danger there of him just kind of whittling in the obscurity, into the background. He comes into the stage in the Champions League and everyone's like, oh, yeah, he is actually class.
Yeah, whereas maybe his move is now to make a big... Yeah.
And then 5 years later, you're like, oh, well, you know, he was good.
Do you remember
when
he was really good, yeah.
Has he progressed that much? Maybe not, because he's playing against Farmers week in, week out.
Sure.
Would be my concern if I was to live.
Well, I still don't think he's going to Man United, so you can keep dreaming on that one. But what about Gareth Bale? He is our next piece of transfer gossip.
God.
Piece of meat.
Piece of meat heading to Manchester United on loan, apparently.
On loan?
Yeah. What do you make of that? Would solve your problems on the right, wouldn't it?
Personally, I don't.
Short-term fix.
I don't really want him anywhere near the club, if I'm honest. No offense,
Gareth. Don't sit on the fence,
Probably. I mean, yeah, I've never had an opinion.
I know this is shocking.
No offense to Gareth, but Gareth. I just don't first name terms. Obviously.
Yeah, why do you think Gareth Bale isn't a Gary Bale?
Apparently,
no
one's called Gary. Apparently, there hasn't been a Gary in Britain since 2001.
Cahill.
Good.
No, like, but
he's 35.
I think Doogie said the stat yesterday, and I don't believe it, but apparently nobody's been named Gary. No baby's been named Gary in Britain since 2001.
Why?
Yeah, there wasn't like a Gary who was a murderer. They were called Gareth, and then you'd get a nickname of Gary, surely.
Is that how it works?
I don't know. I don't know any Garys.
Yeah,
because they don't exist anymore.
Gareth is just like Welsh.
You can't really say it without having a bit of a Welsh accent either.
They're both so bad. I hate both those names. Yeah.
But would you hate him at Man United?
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I personally would because, right, for one, he's turning 30 next month. Mm-hmm. He's had 19 injuries.
And he's on 450k a week.
He joined Real Madrid. 450k a week. Like, have we not learned from Alexis Sanchez if we sign Gareth Bale? Even if it's unknown.
Imagine if you don't manage to offload Alexis Sanchez and then you hire Gary Bale.
Gary Bale. It sounds so Brexity.
Gary Bale.
If Gareth Bale comes to Old Trafford, it seems as if United are becoming this kind of like dumping ground for formerly good players, like right on the cusp of decline, that will just have like one final swan song at top level football.
Yeah, you're retired
for like 3 months.
Yeah, it's like we're like the Premier League's LA Galaxy. Yeah. You know, like all these former, like these good players, like again, Sanchez was fantastic, right in the cusp of decline, 450k contract, straight down the drain. Same with Bale.
Seem like really, well, like, Manchester United-y.
I don't like, but that isn't the ethos of United of old, in like terms of like blooding in youth players and like trusting the youth. So why not go and use that excess wage money and go and get Joao Felix?
Because do you trust Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to actually bring him through?
What, as in like develop him?
Yeah.
I mean,
no.
Whether he develops him or not is kind of like a side point. I prefer him at the club. if he doesn't develop, then that's fair enough. You know.
Yeah, but really Gareth Bale is going to be a short-term fix, isn't he?
You still call him Gary Bale?
No, I called him Gareth. I think he might get annoyed at me if I keep calling him Gary. Because obviously he's a listener.
I mean, why wouldn't he be? His record at Madrid is undeniable. He's got, like, what, 103 goals in 230-odd games?
Sure.
You know, it's...
I believe you.
It's undeniable that he's goal scorer. He's got good creation. He's got, what, like, 50-60 assists since joining. He's got good pace, but again, he's just going the wrong side of 30, so that's obviously going to decline over the next couple of years. I just don't see it as a very ambitious appointment, a very ambitious transfer. It's kind of just
seems relatively likely though.
It will be fitting with everything.
So to sum it up, we're saying Harry Maguire to United and City is a no, too much money. We're saying Gareth Bale to Man United is a no, too much money. And we're saying De Ligt to PSG is probably a yes because of there's so much money.
I prefer to see him at United, but
not gonna happen. So
if he didn't sell out, I think he should go to Barca.
Yeah.
Depends if he sells out or not.
Sell out. Wow.
I don't think it's him selling out, though, is it?
I think
selling out is fine if you do it for a sufficiently high fee.
Yeah, I mean, you are definitely available for the right fee.
350k a week. Yeah, definitely.
Our first headline is about the Women's World Cup, and it is USA demolished Thailand 13-0in a record-breaking win. Did you see the game?
I saw the highlights. Mm-hmm. It was almost as long as the game.
A lot of highlights.
13 goals. I actually saw a stat that in that one game, the American women's team scored more goals than the men's team did in World Cups over the last four World Cups.
Wow.
In one game.
Alex Morgan scored 5 in this game, which means that she's one goal short of the top scorers tally from the last World Cup.
She also got 3 assists, 8 goal involvements in one game.
It was filthy, but I mean, at the same time, it's like, there comes a point where it's not really okay to keep running the score up. Yeah.
They also celebrated.
They've received a lot of bad backlash for their celebrations because it got to like 13 and they're still like running over and hugging each other.
Yeah, and like 4 or 5 of them were like in the last 10 minutes. Yeah. And it's just kind of like, we get it. You're really good. Thailand are terrible. But like,
I think you stop kind of celebrating at maybe 5.
And it's a group game.
Yeah.
It's not like a semi-final or something where you're just like, you know what, we're going to put... Like, I mean, the same argument was made after Germany battered Brazil at the 2014 World Cup. But I kind of wanted to defend that a little bit more because at the time it was like Brazil went into that game so arrogant. They were so pumped for it. And Germany just absolutely ripped them apart. Like, but again, that was still seen as a little bit kind of like unsportsmanlike. I don't necessarily have a huge issue with it. But it's more that you're
seems
like,
a bit.
Yeah. I mean,
it's more that there's so little money in women's football that you end up with huge disparities between the good teams and the bad teams.
Yeah.
So as a result, like, you could argue that all this shows is that like inequality is a product of underfunding in the women's game.
Right. Our second headline, because we don't often get football clubs doing great things, especially football clubs from London, which are normally reporting bad news
less
on.
So
it is the Kean Prince Foundation Stadium. Have you, either of you heard much about this?
I've heard a little bit, but...
No.
Well, so basically, the Kean Prince Foundation Stadium is the new name of Loftus Road from the 2019-20 season. Now, 5 local charities were shortlisted by QPR to be given the naming rights of the stadium, and the Kean Prince Foundation won with 63% of the vote. Kean was a talented QPR Academy prospect who was tragically stabbed outside his school in 2006 while attempting to break up a fight, and he was only 15 years old. The foundation was set up by his dad to educate young people on the consequences of knife crime. And his dad actually received an OBE for his work against knife crime in March, I believe.
Okay.
And now QPR have joined the battle against knife crime in London this season, naming the stadium after him, which I think is a huge move considering how much stadiums and their naming rights can be worth. I think it's a really positive step, especially when knife crime in London is such a problem. I read that since the start of 2019, there's been 36 fatal stabbings in London. And if a club in that part of London can be doing something to raise awareness, surely that's a really brilliant thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think the media has been covering it. I haven't seen it many places.
Yeah, I hadn't actually heard about this.
Mm. I have not really seen... I haven't seen a news article about it, to be honest.
And
I,
that
I
is crazy, isn't it?
And yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very, very tragic incident, mm. but it is nice that something this positive has come from it. And the reach now that like the exposure that charity now gets because of those naming rights is fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. But we don't hear many positive stories coming from such tragic events in football. I was trying to come up with other things that have happened recently that we could pull out as football or football clubs or footballers doing positive things in relationship with charity, and it was quite difficult. I couldn't find a club making such a big...
Say, I think it's a lot more common for footballers to be very charitable with their money.
Like
clubs.
Raheem Sterling and Hector Bellerin over Grenfell.
Yeah.
They both did a lot for them, but I haven't seen a big move like this by a club,
especially
as a whole.
Club the size of QPR as well.
Yeah, I think it's such a good... But I guess we have Barcelona had the UNICEF on their shirt for a long time. They still do, but they also have a sponsor now, don't they?
It's nice that they're doing it, and I guess as well, like, because you feel like a lot of these clubs like don't really take responsibility for the fact that there's like a whole generation of young men who are like whose primary ambition in life is to try and get into their academy, and like often those kids then get cut from those academies and kind of potentially have wasted their schooling, and all those things like factor into stuff like knife crime, because like kids without prospects like are more likely to become criminals, like that's just simply the way it is, like, so yeah, it's good that QPR are trying to do something about it. We'll see if it actually does sort of raise any awareness for
it. Yeah, hopefully it does. I think it's a huge gesture, and I see how it can be a negative.
It's also good in that like football clubs these days are run such business minded, all financially minded, all about how much money you can make, turnover, etc. So to do something like this, which is somewhat selfless and kind of giving back to the community, is really nice to see.
And maybe it'll pave the way for other clubs to do something similar.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Obviously not Old Trafford though, because that's the Delict Stadium.
Oh yeah, we've already sold the naming rights to Mino Raiola. Right, so it is everyone's favourite section again. Anything but football.
Yes.
Patrick, I can hear the cheers, the popping of champagne in the background. This week, the only news we've really been seeing is the shock news that some privileged, wealthy politicians have tried drugs.
Oh,
which is shocking.
Not drugs.
Wow.
I feel like there's just always been this ridiculous idea of like, it always used to be like, I've never done any drugs. And now it's like, I have done drugs, but I didn't like it and I regret it. And it's just like, it's all right just to be like, yeah, you know, like actually I have done some things that I maybe wouldn't do now, but like I don't regret
such
them.
Such a hard
whatever.
Line
I was just
against
young.
Because every middle-aged MP acts as if they did when they were 18. I mean, that's
yeah,
a fact,
but I think
it?
It's a bit different when they're representing a party that are quite hard lined against drug.
Yeah, that's the
users.
Problem. The problem is the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, then it's just like, oh, I don't know. I just don't care. Like it. It's
well, that's a good job because.
Oh, Jesus.
I also said that we've also extremely disappointed about this year's Love Island, so that rules that out of our anything but football chat.
No one's hot.
So yeah, that is
they're less
hot
and less interesting.
So
than last year.
I'm going to pick the topic, and I've just come back from holiday, so I want to hear what your favourite holiday destinations are.
Tell us about your holiday first. Yeah.
My holiday was fab, thank you.
Where did you go?
I went to Ibiza. It was actually so much fun.
With the girls.
I went with all my friends. We had a lovely time in the villa and on the boat. We did go on a boat for the day. It was brilliant. And if anyone wants to fund my next holiday to Ibiza, that'd be great, because I now can't. But less about my holiday. Patrick, what has been your favourite holiday destination?
Ooh, I don't know. Sri Lanka's probably one of the best holidays I've ever had. That was
beautiful
last year.
When you went.
It was amazing. I love Sri Lanka. I'm going to Japan in November.
Oh, cool.
So I'm excited about that. As a kid, probably the best holiday I ever had. Mexico's good. South Africa's good. But probably like the last family holiday I went on, which was the summer before I went to uni, where we went to Rio for a week, then we maybe more than a week, maybe like a week and a half. Then we went across country to Foz do Iguaçu to see the falls, which is like on the border of like Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil.
That's a great family holiday.
Then up to Asuncion to see some old friends in my family. That's where my parents met in Asuncion, and it was just amazing, like amazing food, really fun people. Like Rio's incredible, Asuncion's fantastic. Went into Argentina as well, so that was really, really nice. Yeah.
What about you in Europe? You must love Paris. You did live there for...
I love Paris.
How long were you there for? 3 months?
2 months.
2 months.
I mean, when I was a kid, when I first went to Paris as a kid, I thought it was rubbish. Because it's like, it is kind of dirty and it is kind of like, you know, not great. In some ways, and also, you know, when
just
you're a kid,
like you.
Wait, thank you. When you're a kid as well, like you go down the Champs Elysees and stuff, you know, like you see the Paris that like you think you're meant to see, and it's not actually that great.
Yeah.
But it's so easy to live in Paris. Like it's not that much of an adjustment. And it, and for the first like month after I came back, I would go into restaurants and would like a douche, like really like struggle not to speak French to the waiter because I was just used to like speaking English with Emma and then speaking like French like to other people.
Yeah.
But yeah, learning French was great. I don't know, I just love Paris. Like Paris is just really like one of my favorite places in the world.
What about you, Pete?
I would say, well, I went to Bali last year, which was obviously fantastic.
Bali.
And Bali in Indonesia, not Bali.
Yeah.
Bali for anyone who's confused.
But my favorite place in the world would probably be Florence.
Yeah, I think that's mine as well.
I mean, I was there for like a day in 2014 with my ex-girlfriend. Big up.
Shouts to the ex-dormant.
I went back with my current girlfriend last 2 years ago.
And it was better that time,
I
see. Yeah, of course.
And yeah, it's just such an amazing place. And I don't think I've ever been anywhere that is quite as like a visual representation of the Renaissance.
Yeah.
In terms of like just walking down a normal Italian street and you turn a corner. And then there's just the Duomo. It's just like
stunning.
And like I just remember walking about and that constantly happening to me with different buildings. Mm-hmm. And everything's just walkable. Food's fantastic. There's so much culture.
The wine
and,
is so,
you know,
good.
Fiorentina kit is amazing.
Yeah, that is good. Which girlfriend was better?
Jess.
I'd agree.
Right answer.
I don't even know the other one, but I bet it was Jess.
Yeah. So yeah, Florence.
She's great.
So yeah, Florence is my favorite place in the world.
I think it's mine as well. But what about outside of Europe? Or mine also is Ibiza, obviously.
Oh, obviously. again, Indonesia was lovely.
I really think you're all judging Ibiza. You know, it was actually a really lovely island. It stopped, you know, looking down your nose at it, Patrick. You'd have a lovely time.
For me, it's lumped in with the same holiday destinations as like Ayanapa.
No, Magaluf, it's nothing like those places.
In my opinion. I've never been. I've been to Magaluf and
I think it's different.
Like,
if you go to San Antonio, then yeah, it is like that. Mm. And there is a strip and that's where you stay well clear of. But parts of Ibiza are so pretty. Yeah. Like the old town is lovely.
Yeah,
the food is great.
Can't you just go to can't you just go to like Mallorca though?
No, because that doesn't have all the like fun
basic stuff.
Parties.
Yeah.
Sure. Cuba's I would like to go really to Cuba, cool. But Cuba is apparently quite difficult to find good food.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes. Like,
you could have a cool car.
You can have a cool
The pictures from Havana look amazing.
You do have double currency, right?
Your
so there's
Instagram
like tourist
would be
currency
great.
And local currency. Like, so that's
really.
And there are like, yeah, there's like a tourist currency and like local currency. Yeah. But there are like up and coming food places, but Cuba is in the process of like kind of like regenerating like all that kind of stuff because now investment is getting a little bit more open there. So I don't know, like I would love to go to Cuba, but if I can't have really good food somewhere, I'm kind of like, I'll go back later.
Sri Lanka is one place that we were planning to go, but then the dates would have been like right in the middle of their monsoon season.
Yeah, there were two monsoon seasons.
So we decided to go to Indonesia instead.
I mean, it's not a bad chance.
Lovely. Yeah. Right, well, thank you very much. It's been nice to have you both back, even though you've been quite mean this entire time.
What?
You won't have me next week because I'll be in Lake Garda in Italy.
Oh, that is so annoying.
You barely work.
Yeah,
I barely work.
Part-time Pete is part-time again. Shock.
We're going to have to get back like fake plastic Zach Jello.
Yeah, we're going to have to replace you again.
He's not my replacement.
He is.
He's fill-in. He's a passable fill-in. Like at those award ceremonies where they get seat fillers.
Oh, that's so good.
There he goes. But thank you for listening. And we will be back next week just without Pete. Bye.
You're lost. Bye.